The Mike Missinelli Show.
Mike Missinelli. 97.5 FM, Philly's first FM sports station.
We on an uneven playing field, top of the totem pole. 97.5, Mike Missinelli Show.
Si, senor, we numero uno. And internationally large, just like a sumo. 2-6, Monday to TGIF. Mikey misses the Philly where Haiti's the wide clef. A man of the people, ambassador. Put this bull in the ring, they turn the matadors. Our competition completely non-existent. Burning up the phone lines, record number listeners. All the biggest names and the hottest topics. A runaway train in a drive-time slot. It's kind of hard to stop us. On remote, standing ovation just like an opera. The best show on earth, I feel that's very proper. The most electric sports talk, ain't no need to shock ya. Turn your radios up, Mike's ready to rock.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's the Mike Missinelli Show on a Tuesday, and it's a day when the Sixers can clinch the number one seed, but it wouldn't matter if they lost. This is an inevitable result, so whether it happens tonight or whether it happens next night or the night after that, they're going to get to number one seed. It's an inevitable result. So the thinking is not so much they're going to get the number one seed. The thinking is, when you look at the road to the championship, what could possibly happen? And we talked about it yesterday, and you know, I was listening to Anthony's show earlier, and he was saying that he thought the West was better than the East. So when they get in the finals, they're going to face a very formidable foe. But I don't look at it that way. Here's why. I think their main competition still is the Nets, because the Sixers' strength is how they can defend. So if you're talking about them facing a team in the West, and the three teams that it could be the Lakers, it could be the Clippers, or it could be the Jazz. Now, we've seen them play the Jazz, right? The Suns, maybe, I'm not so sure they're ready to make that leap. But if you want to include the Suns, that's fine. But in every case in the West, I believe the Sixers defense can handle their best option. With the Nets, it's a little different. You can handle one of the options. I don't know if you can handle all three of the options. So I think that if they got to the NBA final, I don't know how Vegas would look at it. But you know, we've seen Utah. There's no way Gobert handles Embiid, especially if Embiid brings him out, which you saw the last time that happened. They smoked the Jazz. And Donovan Mitchell can be handled, I believe, by Ben Simmons. If you look at the Lakers and the Clippers, you know, I think the Sixers can defend both of those teams. Now, they don't have the firepower that, you know, the Clippers have Paul George, and they have obviously Kawhi. But I think that team could be easier to defend than the Nets would be. So the number one seed is a monster get, and it's going to happen. And I think that the enthusiasm for these playoffs, where the Sixers have a real realistic shot to win a championship, all comes down to one thing, and I don't want to make this a Ben show anymore, but against the Nets, Ben is going to have to contribute more offensively. I think we can all agree on that, right? Maybe he doesn't have to contribute more offensively against the Western team. I don't know. He probably does, but certainly he has to score against the Nets. And so when the playoffs start, that's the one thing I'm looking for. Can he contribute more offensively than he does? And if he does, like if he comes out of the game, he gets on one of these runs where he's ultra aggressive, he's 18-20 every game, then I've got very little worries that the Sixers can win an NBA championship. Now, am I getting ahead of myself here?
No, you're not. You're not getting ahead of yourself. The Sixers can put themselves in a position, realistically, to win a championship, if that's what you mean.
Yes.
No, you're not putting...
Because the West... Are you afraid of the Western teams? Like the Sixers... Do you think the Sixers would not win a seven-game series against... Is there one team you go, nah, they can't against?
No, there's no team, but they would be underdogs against. They would be underdogs against the Jazz. They would be underdogs against the Clippers. They would be underdogs against the Lakers. And they would be underdogs in... Most likely, unless they handled the Nets.
Did they beat underdogs against Phoenix?
Yep. Because Phoenix beat them twice this year. Phoenix beat them twice this year. So I think if it got to that point with Chris Paul and with Booker, I think they would be under. Now, I think they would beat the Suns. I think the Sixers can win the title this year. I truly believe the Sixers can win the title this year. The reason I think the enthusiasm is we haven't seen it yet. But the tough part about that is you don't know that when a first time champion's emerging, you don't know until you know. Like, I hate to say it like that, but you don't know until you know. Even if you're talking about a dynasty, people didn't know Jordan was going to be able to win titles until Jordan won a title. Because there used to be people who didn't think Michael Jordan mm-hmm. could win. People didn't think LeBron could win. That's the tough part, is being able to project. I think this team, because Embiid is as good as any player in this league, he has ascended. Once you have a player that's as good as anybody, you can now win the whole thing. I think they can win the whole thing, and getting the one seed is huge. And I also like to point out that last night it was proven that anybody can beat anybody. Those Bucks got smoked last night. The same team, oh, how come the Sixers only beat them by? Yeah, they beat them. The Spurs smoked that Bucks team. So I just want a record. Like, you know, people, oh, how did the Sixers only win by? Yeah, they smoked the Bucks. That same Spurs team that the Sixers, quote, only beat by. But anyway, yes, I think it's realistic. I'm starting to look that way because the one seed's locked down. I'm excited.
All right. So there's where we stand.
I think that's fair.
We're in an exciting period of just like anticipation. It's like, just wait for the moment. The moment can't get here fast enough for me. I mean, even the lower rounds, we're going to be engaged, no question, because it's playoff basketball. But yeah. I just don't see the Sixers losing to the two teams they have to play before they get to the Eastern Conference Final, and I just can't wait for it.
It's exciting. And then, unfortunately, Jaylen Brown gets hurt. Boston's a possible first-round matchup. Now, they, even though the Sixers handled them all year, they would even be in a more weakened state if the Sixers mm-hmm. were to play them, further cementing. I didn't think any of those teams would be a threat, but now Boston was the one, I guess, who was the, quote, most scary you could possibly play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now they're not scary because Smart can't shoot at all anymore. His defense, I don't know what's wrong with him. And now Jaylen Brown's out. It's Tatum and the Pips anymore, and the Pips aren't going to be able to get it done. Sixers sweep them. Sixers sweep the Celtics.
Yeah, I agree. That'd be a nice sweep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm in such a state of limbo. I feel like I'm bobbing on top of a lake with one of those big fat inner tubes around me. I'm just kind of bobbing, and I'm staying there. I can't get to the shore. I can't, like, I'm in the middle of it. I'm just bobbing, and I'm waiting for like a wind to blow or something. I it's a weird spot I'm in here.
Well,
the Eagles are out of sight, out of mind. The Flyers finally. All right, hey, they got the two points to end the season last night, but they're out.
They're out now.
They're out. So our focus is on the Phillies, and that season goes on forever, and we overreact to early games, and the Sixers are right here. They're right there for us.
They are. They are. And I think that all the enthusiasm is coming. I think there are some fans out there that want them to lock it down before mm-hmm. they can open the champagne. So win tonight, and I think tomorrow, I know there are people still reticent about the Sixers. And they're going to remain reticent until they see it.
Okay, then that's great, because that's what I wanted to talk about today. The reticent people, like, take yourself away from being a fan who lives and dies, and you get your emotions, and you're afraid you get your heart broken. Take yourself out of that if you can, and remove yourself from society, and then look in on the sports world, and tell me exactly why you are so reticent. You know, can they beat the Nets? We'll see. I don't know, but like, if they beat the Nets, I really think that the path is an NBA championship. I mean, that's the only hurdle that I see. So I don't know why people, why are you reticent? You're not reticent about the first two rounds, are you? Because the Sixers, the one thing they have proven is when they play bad teams, they're a better team. And they're not going to slip and lose to a lesser team. They're not that type of team that's going to collapse. They have too many veteran players for them to collapse like that and lose their way like we've seen in the past. And the competition you're going to be playing is so weakened in the first two rounds that, you know, it was an achievement when they beat the Miami Heat a couple years ago. But beating them this year is like, they're better.
I feel like it's one of those things where, you know, as we're on the precipice of a potentially really deep run, it's like you said, that old mindset comes back where it's like, we don't want to get excited. But when was the last time this is, and I feel like for a lot of Sixers fans, this has been going on.
Feedback,
yeah, I don't know what that is. You know,
turn your headphones down a little bit.
Do you have headphones down?
Yeah. How are we now?
All right.
Better? Oh, no. I was going to say, I feel like it's just, this is like kind of could potentially be a culmination of the process. So it's like 10 years in the making, which is a lot of anticipation built up over 10 years. It's not just like one season after another. It's like, is this the end of the process? Because people don't necessarily know when that is, but the consensus is it's a championship.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you got to look at it realistically here. I always try to look at things realistically. Like, being reticent about this team not getting to the Eastern Conference Finals, which I hear a lot, is foolish, I think. It's illogical. Now, if you can make the case that they can't defend three guys who can make a shot at any time, that's logical, except they're just getting back together. By that time, they're just getting back together. Like, you don't know what Harden is at this point coming off an injury. So, like, you can't even count that they have three that are going to bury you. And plus, they're going to have to get through Milwaukee. So, I don't know. I don't have any reticence at all. Now, if they lose to the Nets, and the Nets, those three guys are lights out and they're playing like all-stars like they are, then maybe. But I think the Sixers are really in a great spot right now.
I agree. I think they're in a great spot. And I think that it's time for people to, I think there's a bit of cowardly. There's some cowardly lions out there. And I feel comfortable saying that. We've become so scared to commit. And for the younger fans, I'm not talking about the old school. Old school fans have been burned. We talked about it. But there's some, a lot of the Sixers fans are a younger crowd. They have not felt any real pain. Think about how the pain that before 83, if you read about it, the pain of losing in the finals and losing to the Celtics with a 3-run lead and different kind of pain that they have. We don't have any of that pain. We don't have any of that pain, younger Sixers fans, yet they have that fear. I got to kind of call some of them out there a little bit cowardly.
I want to get into today. I want to talk to the people that are very reticent. Now, here's the things that could go wrong. It's the Ben is the major factor. We all know that. If Ben doesn't up the offensive game, they could be in trouble against the Nets. Or if Seth Curry doesn't make shots or Danny Green doesn't make shots, those are the things that can derail you against a team that is going to score. So, I don't know. What else is illogical about that? If they lose to the Nets and they lost because the Nets were a better team, then to me, I can live with that.
So could I. The Nets were better.
You know, so what are you afraid of? The only thing you could be possibly afraid of is that the Nets are better and you have no control over that.
Right. You're absolutely right. And I think that I do. And it's not that I'm trying to call people out. It's that I've with outsiders in this show, I hear it all year long. People who are afraid to commit.
What do you gain by not being afraid to commit? Really, what do you gain by that? What, you protect yourself somehow? You're still going to be disappointed if they lose. You're not really protecting yourself from anything. If they lose, they lose. You're going to be disappointed. So face up to it. But you can't be afraid to lose. All right, let's talk about it. Let's get the people out. The conversation. It's all Sixers, man. Right now, the Sixers own the town. This is the conversation. 610-632-0975. Of course, we'll talk some Phillies baseball today and this rumor that the Phillies could trade for Chris Bryant. I like Chris Bryant. I think he would add a lot to the lineup. But I don't think it only works for me if you're going to move Hoskins. He can't play center field. So, like, if you're going to it would have to be a two-part move for them to acquire. And I wouldn't be against it. If they acquire Chris Bryant playing third base and move Bohm to first, I think they'd be a better team. But they would still have the center field problem.
Well, he's playing center field for the Cubs three times last week.
But the Cubs are like, they don't know nowhere else to put him. He can't play regular center field. That dude, he's too big. He hasn't played center field, he played three times this year, but he doesn't have the talent to play center field.
Better than what you got.
Nah, he would kill you in center field. You can't put a guy like that in center field. He wouldn't get into anything. All right, 610-632-0975. We'll have Matt Breen on to discuss that. It's the Mike Mussinelli Show, 610-632-0975, and we're back after this.
The Mike Mussinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
And it's called Nats News.
That's right, Mike. First, we're going to go around the globe to the UK, where a documentary is being made about a man who got drunk and changed his name to Celine Dion. Thomas Dodd, a man from Staffordshire, got very drunk in 2019. Ooh. And did something very unexpected. The 31-year-old forked out 89 pounds and changed his name to that of his idol. Since then, he's made headlines with friends and strangers calling him Celine as he passes by on the street. And now his life story is getting additional recognition. A documentary is being made about him. So this this Japanese filmmaker wants to make a documentary about this strange tale, and they're casting a Japanese actor to play him and have taken measurements of his home. So he said he was contacted by a TV company who was representing a Japanese documentary maker, and it's a documentary based on the story from his Christmas Eve and the crazy things that have happened since. And he said he's happy that he doesn't have to be in it. But yeah, so apparently last year he was on Ellen DeGeneres and won like $10,000. But yeah, he changed his name to Celine Dion when he was drunk.
What is so interesting about a guy that is drunk who changes his name to Celine Dion that would make a documentary? Like, I'm trying to, like,
I would watch it.
You would?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, he said he did it.
Here's with the guy
changed his name to Celine Dion.
Yeah.
There's got to be that guy's got to have a good story.
Yeah, I mean,
why? Maybe he's just a drunk.
The drunks, I've been around a lot of drunks. I know of a drunk. None of them changed their name to Celine Dion.
No, he said that he did it because he loves her, and she's his go-to person that he listens to when she needs cheering up. So he spent a lot of the pandemic watching her concerts at home, and then maybe it like influenced him so much. And when he was drunk, he said, you know, once it sunk in and he woke up and he realized what he did, he said he was fine with it. Then he changed his name on everything. So now his name's Celine Dion, and they're going to make a movie about it. His mom didn't like it at first.
Well, of course.
I'm befuddled. Listen, when Bruce Jenner wants to change his sex, become Caitlyn Jenner, that's a story. Some drunken, where is it?
Staffordshire
wants to change his name to Celine Dion. I don't find anything interesting about that.
He said that there's a lot of like Celine fanatics who ask them to record a video for him because that's like the ultimate fan, right? Don't you think?
That's what it's about. He's such a big fan. Why has he become such a fan of Celine Dion?
Would you care about why he's a fan of Celine Dion?
Because I find that, first of all, I find anybody that's super fan of her quite interesting.
I love her. But I'm not a super fan.
You're not a super fan.
No, I like her.
You've never mentioned her before.
But if it was somebody notable who changed the name to Celine Dion, I can get it, but it's just a guy.
That makes it a good story. I like the regular people.
If you could change your name to one celebrity, what would it be?
Nothing for me.
George Clooney.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Ty?
I don't know.
Me?
Yeah. What celebrity would you be?
I mean, probably none.
None?
No.
Nobody?
I don't know.
All right.
I mean, I guess I'd be
Alex Rodriguez. You change your name.
No.
Because you love him so.
No, I'll try to think of, like, no, I would do a name like Rip Torn or something like
Rip
that.
Rip Torn?
Yeah, like that's what my favorite celebrity name.
Princess Consuela Banana Hammock.
No, I'd be Rip Torn.
One other thing on this whole thing, right? Why would they let him, a drunk guy, come in and allow him to go through the change of name process?
I guess they didn't care. If he's forking up the 89 pounds.
It seems like some more somebody fluid thing over there.
Yeah, you know, Holmes, nah, he ain't drunk. I tell you what, sleep it off. Tomorrow, if you think of the same thing, come back in.
Look, I mean, if I was the person doing the name change, I probably would have been like, hand it over. Here you go, Celine.
Who am I to judge?
Right.
Your heart's going to go on.
Suppose you're a tattoo guy.
Different.
A guy comes in.
Tattoo's different.
He's blasted. He says, I want you to bleep you across my chest.
No, it's different.
Now, if you're a responsible tattoo guy, you go, Holmes, you're a little drunk. Think about this.
Right. Tattoos are different.
All right. Whatever. What's the second story?
All right. So this one is a doozy, but it's very diabolical. A woman staged a fake funeral for her ex-boyfriend so that his mistress believed that he's dead. So this woman learned her boyfriend had cheated on her, and this is how she retaliated. So she was pregnant, this woman named Thea Loveridge, and after she gave birth to their baby, she realized he was cheating the entire time with his ex, who caused drama in their relationship. So he ended up going to prison for something, and she was texting him, trying to find out where he was, all worried why he wasn't talking to her, so she had his phone. So then she messaged her and told her that he was gone, but that's not all she did. She staged a fake funeral for him and even sent out pictures of the service after, convincing his sister to go along with the scheme, and it's been 3 years and she still thinks that he's gone. So every year, apparently, she posts tributes to the love of her life on Facebook, saying how she's sorry that she couldn't be there to save him when he died.
I like it.
I love
now,
it.
Is the woman doing it because when the guy gets out of prison, the competitor is gone?
I guess, yeah. I mean, the internet kind of went crazy over it, and everyone's like, it's the sister backing you up for me. This is heinous. I'm in love with it. And then it's like, what if she married another man, finding out he's alive, and now she's conflicted? But
well, this woman has to move, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but it doesn't really indicate what he's in jail for or how long he's in there. So
I like it.
I like it,
yeah,
too.
I like the move. Ladies out there, though, I'm not trying to be a hater. Can we mix in maybe not having children with the people in prison and mix in having kids with people who aren't in prison? Because it happens.
Well, he wasn't in prison when.
Yeah, but you know the prison type.
Right.
Maybe I just think that in general in society, I'm not trying to kick the guys in prison out or down.
No.
I'm saying perhaps mix in some sort of birth control method of any kind.
Right.
With the prisoner.
Yeah, so I mean, that's one ultimate revenge for both of them.
Yes.
And he's in jail, so sucks for him.
That's good creativity.
Very good. All right.
So the final story, Mike, is an update on Nat's news from yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Which I would just
updating
like to...
Updating Nat's news for the first time ever.
Yeah, this is important. So I would just like to put a PSA out on behalf of the show that anything that we say in Nat's news is not condoned or meant as sort of inspiration to take Nat's news into your own hands and commit something that was done in Nat's news in the name of the Mike Missinelli Show.
Correct.
However, I was alerted last night that there was this pothole in Fox Chase. If you know the Fox Chase area, right on Ron and Oxford near Riker's Meats and the Dunkin' Donuts. I used to live up that way.
Uh-huh.
And here this pothole had been like 2 feet deep and it was there for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
People were telling me. And somebody must have listened to Nat's news yesterday, decided to follow our friend from the news in New Zealand, who decided to draw spray paint a giant penis around the pothole.
A copycat Nat's news crime. I love it.
But wait, that's not all, Mike. Uh-huh. That is not all.
That's step one, though. That's step one.
Somebody thought to do it, which, okay, fine. But the biggest thing of all, and this is the breaking news, is that it worked. As of this morning, the pothole was fixed after 2 years. I did a little digging.
Yeah,
I saw. So the people in Fox Chase are saying bad news. There's a giant, you know, spray painted around it. But the good news is the pothole is fixed. So while we don't condone any sort of vandalism,
so get out there and erase it now.
Yes.
whoever did it has the responsibility to scrub it out.
Yeah, I think maybe chalk
Kramer
would be a good
needs to get out
option.
There. You got to do it. No, get the paint thinner.
Yes, get paint thinner.
You got to do it in paint, unless though, because chalk, it's, they'll just wash
it
away. Right.
Unless it's latex paint, which you can wash, scrub it away with soap.
There you go.
I mean, the photo I'm looking at now, it's right outside of Riker's Prime Meats.
That's awesome. I've seen the photo.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
Why didn't the person who went to fill the hole, they don't have any equipment or anything else on the truck to maybe take off the thing?
What, scrubbing equipment?
Yeah.
No, man.
They have a brush?
No, they're carrying scrubbing equipment. They're with asphalt.
That's all they got.
Yeah, what do you think? They got, like, Depp industrial cleaner on there with a brush?
Well, whoever it is got to get that thing out there. Don't let
you guys,
a washing machine come by and light the joint on fire.
See, this is all unionized, man. You got to get the penis patrol.
For that's
right.
City.
Right. That's
the crew.
Their job, the penis patrol.
We don't even have a sponge on the truck.
Is that, do you call 311? Because that's the number that you call for potholes, just a PSA, before you go spray paint anything.
That's 311. Awesome.
Call 311 and ask for the penis patrol to come out.
Now, that's as you brought up the sponge, because on the other side, I got a sponge tail.
You have
a sponge tail?
Like, that's from Kirby Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Where Larry goes, you can't get the sponge. But on the other side, I got a sponge story.
Oh, I'm excited. Right.
Somebody get a sponge.
Yeah, somebody get, well, can't you get the sponge?
Yeah, that was great.
All right, so on the other side, I'll give you a little sponge action. So here's...
Nice.
Here's your Phil's lineup tonight. McCutcheon, Segura, Harper, Realmuto, Miller. Brad Miller in the lineup playing right. Where's he playing? Left field? No. Where's Miller playing?
Now let me look.
Third base. Bohm is out of the lineup tonight.
Yeah, that's
Brad Miller at third. Bohm getting a rest because he's struggling. Hoskins, Didi, Herrera, Chase Anderson tonight for your Phils.
Gonna be a tough one. Chase Anderson on the mound.
Yeah, he was successful last outing. I might have to go against him tonight.
Yeah.
All right. Mike Missinelli Show back. A quick break. Back into this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Let's find out how they can actually improve their team. And the story was written by our next guest in today's Inquirer about Chris Bryant. We welcome on the Comcast Business Hotline covering the Phillies for the Inquirer. Matt Breen joins us. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Mike.
All right, Matt, let's talk about this Chris Bryant thing right out of the chute, because obviously that bat would help, but they don't have a spot for him.
Well, they don't have a spot if you consider him as a third baseman, but he's been playing a lot in the outfield, and I just thought it was really interesting. The last week, all of a sudden, Chris Bryant's playing center field three times last week in Chicago, and he's been the subject of trade rumors for more than a year now, and it just seems like the Cubs are showcasing him by saying to other teams, hey, Chris Bryant isn't just a third baseman. He also can play center if you need him to.
Matt, do you actually think he could be an everyday center fielder? He's 6'5" guy. He's never run anywhere.
But he's making it look easy. It's like, you know, I'm writing a story yesterday and I'm looking at defensive metrics and, you know, watching some Cubs games to see how he does it and then listen to his post-game interviews that he's done over the last month. And everybody's saying that he can handle center field. He's athletic enough to do it. I know it's crazy to think because we don't watch this guy every day. And you look at the size that he's similar in frame to Alec Bohm. Like Alec Bohm probably can't play center field, but Chris Bryant, his entire life has been, you know, a freak athlete. Bryce Harper called him Silk when they were kids growing up in Las Vegas because he was so smooth with the way he played the field wherever he was at. And I think if you can put that bat in your lineup right now, the best hitter in baseball, if you can put him in your lineup, you can live with him in center field for 3 months.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you.
10 years. 3 months.
I can't see it. I really can't see you living with three months with him in center field. Occasionally, yeah. Mostly like a left field type of situation. I think our eyes are too big for our stomach. That hole is so big that we're thinking unreasonable thoughts here. Now, Wrigley Field is also a tiny center field. Wrigley Field is a tiny center field too, and he's played there three times. Like we don't have a frame of reference that he would be able to handle center field.
But is a Dubal Herrera a Gold Glove center fielder? Roman Quinn, you know, I think Scott Kingery playing center field. It's not like we're used to seeing amazing defense.
My point is, you grind a guy up like that, asking him, taxing him defensively like that as a hitter. I think that's the other part of the equation.
Yeah, if the Phillies made this move, I think you would give a shot to play him in center field.
All right. And well, listen,
it's worth it.
The bar is so low that I think we're getting a little unrealistic about who can play center field. But all right, I got you. Now, are you hearing that they're really active in this?
It's so early that I don't even think trade discussions have started. It's the Cubs are 500. The Cubs are going to trade him most likely this summer. But when you have a guy like Chris Bryant, like I said, the best hitter in baseball right now, you don't trade him in May or June. You probably carry this to July to try to get the best offer, because they're in a rebuild right now. So they're trying to get the best offer they can get. And there's going to be more than just the Phillies involved. But if you look at the history of Dave Dombrowski, this is the kind of trade that he's attracted to. If he thinks his team is ready to win, is a player or two away, he hasn't been afraid to make those types of moves in the past. Wherever he's been, every stop he's always made, he's always been able to push the chips in to get that kind of player. And, you know, it just makes sense for the Phillies. I'm not saying the Phillies are going to make this happen, but it makes sense for them to do it. And if you want to look at like an ideal package, you look at the Manny Machado trade from a couple years ago, again, that the Phillies were involved with. And what the Orioles got from the Dodgers was their sixth or seventh best prospect. He was number 73 in Baseball America's top 100. So it didn't cost, you know, the farm to get Manny Machado for the Dodgers. But I think you'll see a similar return. And if that's what it takes to get Chris Bryant, then it would be crazy for the Phillies not to do that.
All right. The only thing I can think of in accompaniment with the trade of Rhys Hoskins, I think that then you play him at third, you play Boehm at first base, and you become a better team. But, I mean, I don't know about the center field thing. But we'll see what happens. All right, so Chase Anderson tonight against the Nationals. Now, they've pounded Eric Fetty, so I don't know what's going to happen tonight. But there are a couple spots now. The bullpen now with Neris is questionable. What are they right now? It seemed that they were gaining momentum, and then they kind of gave it up with some bad baseball and, frankly, some bad managerial strategy against the Braves. So what are they right now, and how are you feeling about the manager, Joe Girardi?
Yeah, it's funny. They've won 5 of 7, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about a team that on paper is hot, but really, if you watch them this weekend, Saturday and Sunday might have been the two most, you know, deflating losses of the season, the way they lost Saturday, and then just the way that they looked on Sunday, how flat they were. I think they're still a 500 team. They're still an average team. The starting pitching is not, you know, is especially at the back end, is just not good enough right now. The bullpen is shaky. I think we can talk about the double switches that Girardi made, but really that game's won if Hector Neris can just close out the ninth inning. He had two guys down to two strikes. And for me, I think I reevaluate who my closer is. If I'm Joe Girardi right now, I think you have other weapons that can be used back there. Or maybe you just, and I know this wasn't popular when Gabe Kapler did it, but I think this bullpen maybe calls for like a closer by committee. And you saw that last week when Neris wasn't available for a couple of days. They figured it out. They used Sam Coonrod. They used Brandon Kinsler. They used Alvarado to piece together the late innings. And I think you could do that every night. You don't have to have one guy pitch the ninth inning. You could have, you know, whoever's your best option that night pitch the ninth. It doesn't have to be Neris every night.
Is he out of rope? This has happened to Neris before where he's been dropped into, you know, a lesser role. Are they at that point at this point, or they still want to trot him out there?
Girardi said twice this weekend that he's still the guy, that he's still the closer, but that's one blown save away, I feel like, from changing. I don't think it's, you know, you're talking about rope. He doesn't have much rope left, I would imagine, because he's had two blown saves. He's had the two losses that were tie games that he gave him up in the ninth inning. So I just think you have like a guy like Sam Coonrod who really looks excellent when you're using him in the seventh or eighth. I think that's, you know, maybe the next guy up at this point. And Archie Bradley's starting a rehab assignment tomorrow, so he could be here within the week.
All right, two questions about particular players here. And one is the Harper thing. His RBI total, has not been delivering. Is he still banged up, or what are you hearing?
Well, the RBI total is misleading because just the chances he's had with men on base.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just almost that's where RBIs kind of can be like a faulty stat, because you can't drive in guys that aren't there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think Harper, since he's come back, has not looked good. And, you know, that's the last week or so since he's been back from being hit in the face. But, you know, if you take before that, he was excellent. And I think maybe, you know, he's going through a rough patch right now. Not concerned about him. He's streaky his whole career. I think he'll be fine.
All right. And interestingly enough, there's been some grumblings about the way Real Muto calls a game and one or two pitchers maybe favoring Knapp to call it. Is he considered a good defensive catcher who can handle a staff? Is that his strength or not?
Yeah, he's an excellent defensive catcher in throwing, blocking, and all that. But I think some guys, such as Zach Eflin, prefer Andrew Knapp just because of familiarity with him. Andrew Knapp and Eflin, you know, started playing together when they were in Double A in Reading. But Eflin's last start was with Real Muto, and he said after the game, it was Friday night's game, that, you know, JT called a great game like he always does. So it's how much do you want to believe in the fact that, yeah, Eflin is paired up with Knapp a lot, but then when he does get paired up with JT, like Friday, he looked excellent. And then he said after the game how good of a job he did game calling. I think sometimes game calling is a bit overblown. And I just feel like, you know, it's almost on the pitcher at this point.
Yeah, because it's his final decision. I just wonder, there are some times when he has called fastballs when a guy has had no clue to hit breaking stuff. And I just wonder what the mindset is there sometimes.
Well, and here's one that you may just made me think of, that Neris, the pitch Neris threw with the home run that Pablo Sandoval was a fastball. Should have been a splitter, but Nara said after the game that it was the pitch he wanted to throw. I'm guessing that he said that I want to, you know, throw my fastball here to set up my splitter is what his plan was. It wasn't, you know, he didn't say that was the pitch JT called for me. That was the pitch I wanted to throw. So
You remember in Bull Durham when Nukalush wanted to throw a certain pitch and Crash kept putting down the finger, you know? So sometimes you got to keep putting down the finger, no?
No, you got to teach JT that.
All right, Maddie. Listen, good to talk to you. We appreciate it. We'll see how they fare against these Nats.
And I hear you want Odubel Herrera in center field instead of Chris Bryant.
No, I don't want anywhere near Herrera. I'm just saying, like, the low bar here. I think we're getting so desperate that we're trying we're trying to fit something into a hole that's not conducive for it.
Yeah. All right,
man. You got it, Matt. Thank you. Matt Breen on the Comcast Business Hotline. You know, and that can happen, too. You're, like, so desperate. You go, yeah, that guy can play center field. My instincts say no. That's not a good idea.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.